Welcome to Piedmont Arts from WDAV. I'm David Borex. Henry David Thoreau published his classic Walden in 1854 about the 2 years he spent in the woods at Walden Pond in Concord, Massachusetts. It was a conscious effort to live simply. That's the inspiration for Charlotte writer Jen McGivney's new book, Finding Your Walden.
He wasn't simplifying to having to do less. He was simplifying to having to do more of what mattered to him. And I know I find that really inspiring to think of how can I do that?
This week on Piedmont Arts, a conversation with McGivney about Thoreau, Walden, and their lessons for us in the 21st century. Also ahead, Phil Vavra delivers his weekly fanfare update with happenings across the Piedmont. Jen Toda McGivney is the back page columnist for Charlotte Magazine. She's written for Success, Simplify, Southern Living, and Our State magazines, among others. She also has worked in digital media jobs at Queen's University of Charlotte and WDAV. Here's an edited version of our conversation on July 17, 2025 at Main Street Books in Davidson. Well, welcome to Main Street Books and to the Piedmont Arts Podcast from Classical Public Radio, WDAV. Thanks to Main Street Books for letting us piggyback on this occasion here. So we think we know Walden. It's such a famous book, but how many have actually read it anytime recently? It's actually a good time to reconsider Thoreau in this book, and that's what our guest Jen Toda McGivney has done with her book, Finding Your Walden, How to Strive Less, Simplify More, and Embrace What Matters Most. Jen is a writer based in Charlotte. We've known each other for about 9 or 10 years from a group of writers and journalists who like to hang out over a beer, and we'll be talking about that a little bit, about the importance of just hanging out sometimes. So you just heard the long list of publications that she's written for. She does have a bachelor's degree in media and arts and design from James Madison University in Virginia and a master's degree in English from Winthrop, living proof that an English degree has value. Okay, maybe in a Thoreauvian way.
In every way.
Welcome, Jen. It's great to be
thank
here with you.
Thank you so much. And thank you, I mean, everyone who came. This is so exciting. Thank you to Main Street Books. This is a thrill.
I hope that we give you a reason tonight to buy this book if you haven't already. If not, consider this a big teaser for it. I have to say, you'll want to read this yourself. I found myself in constant mental conversation with Thoreau and Jen as I was reading this. It's really fascinating and helpful on so many levels. Jen, you're just back from a visit to Walden Pond. I have to start by asking you about your trip last week.
It was magical. I have been somewhat obsessed with Walden since I was 14 years old. This is my favorite book. I have lived a different life because I love this book so much, but I've never been to Walden Pond. And I finally got to go, and I got to the pond at 6:30 in the morning, had it to myself, and just walked the same paths that Thoreau walked and sat in the spot where the cabin was and listened to the birds for an hour. And it was magical. And Concord, Massachusetts, if you love American literature, is like Disney World. Like, all your favorite characters are there. You've got Louisa May Alcott and Hawthorne and Emerson. It was a fantastic trip.
Was there an occasion there, or just you needed to go there?
There's a Thoreau Society, which is actually the biggest society for an American author. And they had a big gathering, and they asked me to come up and sign some books. They sell the book in the bookstore at Walden Pond, which is... To have that stamp of approval on this book means everything to me. To have like a little piece of contributing to Thoreau's story right now, it means everything to me.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah. That's awesome. Who doesn't want their book for sale at a place like Walden Pond? Yeah. Or if you're a local author, having it for sale here at Main Street Books. So Finding Your Walden, who's this book for?
The book isn't just for Thoreau people, although I've been really excited to see that Thoreau people are liking it. I want people to enjoy it who have never read a word of Walden. For me, it's for anyone who's finding themselves in this period of the great reassessment. Because after the pandemic, it was the great resignation when we all quit our jobs. And now it's the great reassessment when so many of us are wondering, am I living it right? There's no better company for questioning like that than Henry David Thoreau. He questioned, like, what am I willing to give a job? What am I willing to not give a job? How much stuff do I need? And at what point is stuff subtracting from my life and adding to it? What is my duty as an ethical citizen of a less than ethical country? Everyone I know is struggling with one of those questions right now. I know I'm 3 for 3. So I wanted to bring Walden into this moment with us. Like, not only see what he said, but see what are people doing today? How are people living Walden-like lives today? And so I did a little bit of both.
Well, you did a lot of research for this book. There's actually a bibliography in this small book, and it's because Jen has done all of the reading for us, and I thank you for that.
You're welcome. It was fun.
Before I forget, it's a wild card question here at the beginning, which may be related to your trip last weekend. And the wild card question is, Thoreau or Thoreau?
It's Thoreau. Thoreau is actually incorrect, and a weekend with the Thoreau Society, everyone was saying Thoreau, but it's so commonly, he's so commonly called Thoreau, it just seems the better way to say Thoreau. I feel like it's like someone coming back from Spain for the first time and saying, Barcelona, I went to Barcelona. It's accurate, but not always the best way to make a friend. So Thoreau's fine.
We talked about this book last fall just as you were finishing up writing. Do you remember that?
I do, because I remember I was trying to get, it's a weird book to explain, and I was talking to David and explaining it, and he's like, well, I'm not really a self-help kind of guy. So I was really curious to hear what it was compared to your expectations.
I really don't read a lot of nonfiction along those lines, yeah. But I have to say, having been required to read the book for this assignment here,
thank you.
that I couldn't put it down. It really spoke to me, and there were a lot of moments when I just said, yes, you know, this really, it speaks to me, it speaks to the things that I've done. Where I am right now, I've made an attempt to retire, and I'm really bad at it. It's actually inspired me to start to pull back from some of the freelance work that I'm doing, and I've got other things I want to do.
Yeah.
And in the book, Jen talks a lot about finding, you know, time for all those other things that you wish you had time for, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but there's an equation here called Waldenomics. Well, everybody talks about Thoreau. He's gotten some bad press over the years.
So much.
And, you know, he's often talked about as a crank. But, you know, what was he doing out in the woods? Was he really an oddball? Well, you know, set the scene for us.
I'm so glad you're asking this, because this was something I got wrong for a really long time. I thought Thoreau's going out in the woods, and he was probably, like, so psyched about adventure. He has his axe on his shoulder. He's so excited to get out there. And, no, dude was in the dumps. He was having a hard time. He's 28 years old, and he's like, I've done all the responsible things. You know, he was a poor kid who went to Harvard on a scholarship. He had a good career as a teacher. He was making it as a freelance writer. He was supporting his parents financially. He had done all the responsible things. And he's like, I thought it would be better than this. I thought life would be more fun than this, which is exactly where I was at 28. So he goes to Walden Pond, and he's trying this experiment, where if he can pare down as much as possible the things that he needs to live, then he can minimize how much he needs to work. He brings 24 things by my account to the pond. And then he realizes, I can work 6 weeks and pay for my entire year. So then, like, what does he do with the rest of his time? He writes a book, not Walden, but another book. He's an operative on the Underground Railroad. He speaks out against slavery and lectures. The Thoreau family, they're friends of Frederick Douglass, by the way. He studies nature relentlessly. He is hanging out with his friends and family all the time. Even at Walden Pond, his mom is expecting him to be at family dinner every Sunday night. But he lives this rich life of balance for the first time in his life. And he's only there for 2 years. It's the only 2 years he ever lived alone. But it informs his strategy for the rest of his life, like pare down, trade up. So that's what I did with Finding Your Walden. How are people doing this now? Like, what can we learn from him now? So we can pare down, so we can trade up. And I think that, to me, is the biggest misunderstanding of Walden. We always focus on simplify, simplify. But we don't think, like, he wasn't simplifying to having to do less. He was simplifying to having to do more of what mattered to him. And I know I find that really inspiring, to think of how can I do that?
That is such a key point in this book. It's all about not throwing everything away. This is not Marie Kondo and giving everything up. It's about getting rid of the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do and what you're called to do. And this book was published in 1854, and it's not, well, it may be for some people an antique gathering dust, but it's really not.
It's so relevant. I mean, the situation that Thoreau found himself in at that time is so similar to what we're dealing with now. At the time, technology was changing faster than anyone could keep up with it. It was changing everything about how people lived and worked and communicated. Industrial capitalism was making work a lot less human and a lot more machine, which I'm sure all of us can deal with right now with AI coming in. There was a pandemic, that politics were getting super partisan and dirty and divisive. This is right before the Civil War. And amidst all of this, Thoreau was wondering, how can I live in a time like this and still live well? And again, I don't know anyone who's not wondering this right now.
So this book actually grew out of a magazine article in Success Magazine in 2021, in which you outlined five principles. And that same framework is used in this book. Yes. Talk a little bit about that.
I tried to get this into so many magazines. It got rejected, I think, 9 times, but I got it into Success. And to have a story about Thoreau in Success Magazine is like, I say in the book, it's like getting like a story about barbecue and vegetarian times. Like, it just doesn't fit. And it's like, for me, it was like the nerdiest way to stick it to the man, to get like a story about Thoreau and Success. But he does, he really, you can apply it to your work life and how can you make your work life better. So for this, I expanded it beyond work and just life.
We won't go through all of these. I think you really need to read the book to go through the five principles. But one section of the book talks about the true cost of things. And you just alluded to that. You know, what is it that you are giving up in the life that you have right now that is keeping you from having the other things that you would like? And there's a lot of talk in there about the idea of having enough. And I'm going to read a little sentence here that really spoke to me. We don't have to live like crows, constantly adding shiny objects to our nests. I wrote a note here. Where's the like button on this paragraph? I'm still translating this to my digital life. But it really made me think differently about what Thoreau did. And you know, he didn't so much hide in the woods as he went on a trip. And this is another kind of background question, but he wasn't out by himself for 2 years, right?
Not at all. And it's funny when people, a lot of people will say, like, you know, he was with people and he thinks he's trying to perceive that he wasn't. He has a whole chapter in the book called Visitors. And in the first paragraph, he said, I am by not nature a hermit. And at one point he brags, I can fit 25 people in this cabin. And an interesting note is the 25 people, it was a women's suffrage group, and he let them use his cabin for their meetings, which, because it's Thoreau. And so, yeah, he had people back and forth all the time. And you think he had those 24 things that he brought, 24 things that are necessary for life. 3 of those were chairs because he expected company. I think we shouldn't forget that. Like, he was there. He wasn't cutting himself off from the world. He was trying to figure out how to live better in the world.
His family visited him on Saturdays, I believe.
Yes. They would bring food, and he would go out on Sunday to have family dinner with them.
Went back to mom's house on Sundays, mm-hmm. Yeah.
He would walk back and forth on the railroad, and he would do it so often that people who worked on the railroad thought he did too. And he says this in the book. He's very open. He was still part of the community.
Where did your love of Thoreau come from? Did you read it in high school like the rest of us?
Before I read it in high school, it came from, I think, 1991 Blockbuster Video. I rented Dead Poets Society. Okay. And that was my introduction to Thoreau because, you know, they would open all their meetings with a section from Thoreau. And I remember before I turned it in, I wrote it down in my journal. Like, I would play rewind to write it down because VHS. And it resonated with me at the time so much. And each stage of my life, it resonates with me in a different way. It's kind of, I've grown with it, and it still challenges me.
Thoreau wrote this book in seasons, and in your book, you talk about how our lives can be seasons as well.
Especially when it comes to work. I think we're all seasonal workers. There is a season where you just need to make the money. There is a season where you have to get out on time because maybe there are kids to pick up from daycare. And there's a season to, like, do the thing that you love to do and follow your passion. And what breaks my heart is we so often put so much pressure on ourselves that work should be your passion and your paycheck, and it should give you everything. And people start to confuse their role with their identity and their salary with their self-worth. And I just think if we think in seasons, it has to serve us for what we need at that time and give us the life that we need to have. And we don't have to think of a job being all things at all time. We can be a seasonal worker.
Every chapter has 5 questions or a few questions at the very end. How did you come to the decision to make it that kind of a book?
What I love about Walden, it's not about Thoreau. It's not about Walden Pond. It's about you. It's about the reader. And I think that's why some people love it, and I think that's why some people really hate it, because he really makes you challenge your motivations and assumptions and think about yourself. So I wanted to do that with this book, too, where it leads people back to themselves and their own stories, because that's why I love Walden.
Well, in your reading of Thoreau, Jen, I think you really give us permission to think differently about our lives. And you have things in there like embrace your inner misfit.
Yes. You
talk about, you know, the perks of being a quitter, which is really about coming to terms with the idea to give yourself permission to do those different things.
I have quit a job because of Thoreau. I have. I had a job. It was very secure and very smart. I was in it for 11 years. And there's a line in Walden, "I left the woods for as good a reason as I went there. Perhaps it seemed to me I had many more lives to live, and I had no more time for this one." And I remember reading that and crying, like, I need to quit my job. Like, I'm done with this season. I'm ready for the next season. And I think what Thoreau allows you to think, it's not quitting, because you have to end something if you're going to start a new season. You have to say goodbye to something to say hello to something else. And I love that he focuses on that. It's a new beginning.
There are so many ideas for you in this book about how to start down this path. One of the ones that I really liked was the idea about taking a sabbatical.
More people are taking sabbaticals than ever, which I'm so happy about. So I talked to this woman who's a sabbatical coach, and people will go to her, and she guides them through, like, how much money do you need to save? What do you want to do? How long do you want to do it? And what struck me about what she said was, she said she was another one who did all of the responsible things and was thinking, like, why isn't life happier than this? And she said, I knew that I was going to blink one day and be 70 years old and realize I never did the things I wanted to do. And how there's this assumption that someday someone's going to come along and say, okay, you sacrificed your happiness for all these years. Now we're going to let you do what you want to do. And she's like, I realized no one's coming. I have to do this for myself. So she saved up. And like, what I love about it, she wasn't rich. She didn't have a lot of money, but she saved up relentlessly for a couple years to have a year where she could do her own thing. And she got in my head, because now I'm thinking, like, I have to do this at some point.
So Thoreau worked a variety of jobs that were not his passion.
No.
But he might have been good at them. By the way, he went to Harvard. He was a misfit there. He wore a green coat. I learned this. He wore a green coat while everyone else wore black coats. He cut his own path, absolutely. You talk about knowing why you work and when to quit and how to quit.
Mm-hmm. Interesting thing about Thoreau, he found success as a writer when he stopped trying to be a working writer. One of the things he learned at the Pond was basically, how do you work as little as possible? And I love this about Thoreau. It's like, how do you sell out as strategically as possible? And he realized he's really good at math. He can survey really well. And surveying pays so much more than writing. Surveying pays so much more than teaching. So after he left Walden Pond, he became a surveyor. And then he could write whatever he wanted. He could write what was in him and what he felt compelled to write. And then he can lecture on slavery, because no one was paying for that at the time. So he got to follow his passion. And all of those things he wrote when he wasn't trying to write for the marketplace are why we know and love him today. So I do like how practical he was. It wasn't like, you don't have to work. It was like, okay, you got to work, but how can you do it as in a way that doesn't kill your soul, basically?
I have heard so many younger people, and I'm a boomer, if it wasn't already obvious, but millennial friends and Gen Zers all talking about, it's just a job. I hear this from my kids. It's just a job, Dad.
Yeah.
It's going to pay the bills. I want to do this. And they already know this intrinsically, I think.
Where was that memo when we were graduating, right? Because it
exactly.
Was all, find your passion. Like, work should be everything. And I think that's so dangerous, especially when work is your identity and so many people are getting laid off right now for very bad reasons. You don't want to lose your identity because when you get it mixed up with a job. So work is what you do to afford the life that you want to have.
So I mentioned this earlier. You've written about Waldenomics. What is Waldenomics?
It's a term I created trying to sum up Thoreau's theory very succinctly. I think the most important line in Walden is, the cost of a thing is the amount of life that we're willing to trade for it. And that, to me, like, changes everything about decisions, because we're not just spending our money. We're spending our time and our energy and our attention. And it really changes the math on decisions about what something is worth. I would also add, well, I didn't use it in the book, but also like environmental impact. Like, you think of, there's like a $20 fast fashion top. I'll wear it a few times. It's fine. But is it worth 200 years in a landfill? So I think thinking of the bigger implications of your choices, I like that he makes you think beyond the dollar.
Among the many gems, factoids in your book is, most of us wear 20% of our clothing 80% of the time. So what about that other 80%, you know?
Right.
That's money you spent. It's taking up space in your house.
The capsule wardrobe people I talk to were the happiest people, and they're making me want to be a capsule wardrobe person. I don't know if anyone knows that in here, but like,
what is that?
Instead of having a closet full of tons of stuff, you have a very curated closet. Everything's high quality, like ethically made, and it fits you great, so you don't have to follow every trend. You create a style that's uniquely your own in like very few pieces, And the people I talk to, like, you just grab two things out of your closet and you're going to look great. You're not, you know, does this fit? Is this in style?
I see this on TikTok. They already know how to do this.
The younger generation right now, like, they're so much smarter than we were.
Well, you end up the book with a section called Spend Life Lavishly, and we won't go into detail on that, but this is something you can get good at, right?
Right, and I don't know, and I also think it gets easier over time, because the older we get, the less we really care about what people think, right? And we can invest more in the things that matter more to us. And I think especially right now, so many of us want to find ways to, how do we make a difference in our community and in our world? And this is, it goes into it too. How can you pare down so that you can contribute in the way that you want to contribute to your family, to your friends, to yourself?
Jen McGivney, thanks so much for joining us here on the podcast.
Thank you so much for coming. This is fun.
That's Jen Toda McGivney talking about her new book, Finding Your Walden, How to Strive Less, Simplify More, and Embrace What Matters Most. Just published by Hampton Roads Publishing. You can learn more about it at findingyourwalden.com. Now it's time for Fanfare, Phil Vavra's weekly update on happenings across the Piedmont.
Thanks, David. While back-to-school shopping may still need to happen, I won't blame anyone for getting distracted by the events on the Fanfare calendar over the next week. You can get pencils and protractors later. Do kids even use protractors anymore? The wonderful North Carolina Baroque Orchestra has performances featuring works by Vivaldi, Bach, and more this Friday, August 8th, 7 p.m. at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Charlotte, and Saturday, August 9th at 3 p.m. at St. Patrick's Episcopal Church in Mooresville. Both concerts are free, but donations are greatly appreciated. The North Carolina Transportation Museum in Spencer is hosting its 2025 Brew and Chew Summer Concert on Saturday, August 9th. Enjoy the classic rock sounds of Motel Soap and sample beers from New Sarum Brewery. Kid-friendly activities include lawn games, a magician, and inflatables. Food trucks will also be on site, and of course, your ticket includes a train ride. The Charlotte Chapter of the American Guild of Organists 2025 Summer Recital Series presents Kathy Reeb and Kevin Haney at St. John's Baptist Church in Charlotte on Sunday, August 10th at 4 p.m. There's no cost to attend the performance, but a free will offering will be accepted to help fund private organ lessons for students in grades 6 through 12. In Winston-Salem, the Sounds of the Summer Pipe Organ Series concludes with an exploration of the renovated and revoiced Fisk organ at University of North Carolina School of the Arts Crawford Hall inside the Gray Building on Monday, August 11th. The program will be presented by Dr. Timothy Olson and UNCSA students. Admission is free. Hailed as one of the funniest musicals of all time, The Book of Mormon returns to Ovens Auditorium in Charlotte for 8 performances, including 2 matinees, August 12th through 17th. Winner of 9 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, the irreverent comedy about mismatched missionaries is played to packed houses in London, on Broadway, and across North America. It does contain some salty language, so you may not want to bring young kids. That's presented by Blumenthal Arts, and again, it runs August 12th through 17th. There are even more sounds, sights, and bites on my complete Fanfare column at WDAV.org. So take a look and get out there and have some fun. David?
Thanks, Phil. That's it for this Piedmont Arts. Check back at WDAV.org/podcasts for next week's episode or others you've missed. I'm David Borax.